From movie set to multiplex, it's the business of film with James Cameron Wilson.
Silent Breed is people!
Hoo-ah!
Mother of mercy. Is this the end of Rico?
Well, it is actually the end of the business of film, at least on Share Radio on DAB, though I'm about to introduce James Cameron Wilson. And James and I want to continue the business of film, so you will still get it on Share Radio online after this week. But James, tell me, what is top of the box office for the last ever DAB version of business of film?
What an exciting week to go out on, Simon. Now, we know what a sensation Fast and Furious 8 was just a couple of weekends ago when it opened with a furious £8.65 million in just 3 days. Mm. Well, the new number one, this frame, sucked up £13.1 million at the UK box office. And if you include the bank holiday Monday, that figure came to £17.8 million. Pounds in 4 days. We're talking about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. To put that into some kind of perspective, the budget of Get Out, another box office success story this year, cost £3.48 million to make by today's exchange rate. Of course, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 cost considerably more than that, $200 million to be precise. But that's still $50 million cheaper than Fast and Furious 8. So it's proving to be a wildly lucrative period for Disney, who are behind the UK's biggest box office hit of the year, Beauty and the Beast, and now Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Of course, the company is still riding strong from Rogue One, a Star Wars story released only last December. And another fact, the first Guardians of the Galaxy opened in the UK with just £4.9 million. This means that the combination of word of mouth, followed by DVD sales, has amounted to an epic opening for the sequel.
Just extraordinary, James. I have to say, much as I enjoyed Guardians of the Galaxy, I've realised I am going to have to rewatch it before I see Guardians of the Galaxy 2 because I can't really remember it. Enjoyable,
well,
popcorn
honest.
Fun, but I just can't recollect anything much that happened.
Well, I did actually watch it 2 or 3 weeks ago to get in the mood and to talk about it on this programme. And I'd forgotten how funny and inventive it was, with an opening sequence to blow your socks off, all accompanied by 10cc singing I'm Not In Love. It was just so funny and shocking. I beg you just to see the opening again, if you've got it at home.
And well, I don't. I'm going to have to buy it, clearly, because I don't think I've got the DVD of this. I'm going to have to buy it online. And one would have hoped that by now it would sort of be free to people who subscribe to Amazon Prime or Netflix, but it appears not to be the case. Clearly far too popular.
Yeah, well, what I love about the Guardian of the Galaxy's franchise is the way it keeps on confounding one's expectations. Once you get over the idea that the Guardians comprise an irascible raccoon, voiced by Bradley Cooper, a Hulk-like bald man who never puts his shirt on, a green alien played by Zoe Saldana, who seems to have based her career on playing women with controversial skin colours, Nina Simone to Neytiri in Avatar. And we also have a talking tree, of course. Once you get used to these guys, you can just settle down and enjoy the ride. Actually, the bald, shirtless wonder is played by Dave Bautista, who is exhibiting a whole new side to his persona. He was former world heavyweight champion wrestler and a bodybuilder, and now a film star, but he now adds comic to his resume.
Well, James, it's as well you said that, because we've got a clip here, and he actually features in it, if I've got the right clip. So let's hear that now.
If I touch someone, I can feel their feelings.
You feel love?
Yeah, I guess, yeah, I feel a general unselfish love for just about everybody.
No, sexual love.
No, I don't.
For her.
No.
She just told everyone your deepest, darkest secret.
Dude, come on. I think you're overreacting a little bit.
You must be so embarrassed. Do me!
So that's a clip. That was him, wasn't it?
It was him, yes. Laughing. This terrible sort of hollow, unconvincing laugh, which he sort of resurrects periodically throughout the movie. Yet he also knocks out the odd comment with sort of deadpan finesse. And there are so many wonderful throwaway deadpan jokes in this. He is a hoot. And if that's not enough to stuff into your crate of popcorn, there's also the more traditional hero of the universe, Chris Pratt, who we heard there, and our very own Karen Gillan, as well as a gold-crusted Elizabeth Debicki, Michael Rooker, Sylvester Stallone, and a very young Kurt Russell. But the real star of the show, of course, is Vin Diesel, who plays an adorable twig. Now, I ought to explain, the film opens brilliantly again with a digitally reduced in years Kurt Russell, who's driving through, I think it was Idaho in 1980, with Chris Pratt's mother. And it's about their romance. And the film is about a lot of things, but basically it's about Chris Pratt, Peter Quill, the character he plays, who's a kind of latter-day Flash Gordon, who's looking for his parentage. And we get a glimpse of that at the beginning. And then we're introduced to Groot, who you may remember is this tree that was voiced by Vin Diesel. Considering the huge billing that Vin Diesel gets on the new film, I don't know what he does on this, because baby Groot barely says anything. And he obviously, he's a twig, Simon. And he says very little. So I don't quite know what Vin Diesel did on this film. But we open with little baby Groot dancing away while the battle, the mother of all battle, takes place behind him. He's dancing to the Electric Light Orchestra's Mr. Blue Sky, which is a fabulous song, and all hell lets loose. But we're focusing on baby Groot. It's a very funny, very gripping opening. It's a very clever film, very, very witty. It's written and directed by James Gunn, who did the first film. And I can't wait to see it again.
Interesting. Sometimes I know you love making lists, James. Sometimes you must make a list of fighters who became actors. Because there
are quite a
lot
from
of
Robert
them.
Mitchum to Ray Winston.
Very well done. Yes, absolutely. Well, okay. I am going to try and get Guardians of the Galaxy in order to watch that, because I probably should bone up on it, I think, before I see Guardians of the Galaxy 2. But obviously comes
highly recommended. Well, if you like The Three Stooges, do you like The Three Stooges?
No, I do not like The Three Stooges, no. Surely nobody who's not American should like The Three Stooges.
Well, there's a lot of, it's four, five Stooges in this, but there's a lot more deadpan humour, and some of it's over the top, but there is so much in it. Just go with it.
All right, I shall endeavour to do that. So, James, let's move on. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 clearly pushed Fast and Furious 8 off the top spot. Is Fast and Furious still in the second spot, though?
It certainly is, yes, of course. It's doing incredibly well, breaking box office records around the world, arguably the best yet of the pedal to the metal franchise, this time with two Oscar-winning actresses thrown into the mix, namely Charlize Theron and Helen Mirren. I'm having a great time at the moment. I'm not usually, as you know, a huge fan of multiplex sort of superheroic fodder.
Yeah, yep, true.
But there's some very good ones out there. And I think if you've got lashings of humour, it really helps. And Fast and Furious 8, I think, was, as I said, arguably the best yet of the octet. Number three, we have another film that I really enjoyed called The Boss Baby, an engaging and frequently very funny cartoon from DreamWorks Animation about a very bossy baby in a suit, voiced by Alec Baldwin. Number four, another film I loved, Beauty and the Beast, with £70 million in the bank. Disney's delightful live-action remake of its classic cartoon is now the eighth film in history to make that amount of money in this sceptred isle. So Disney are on such a high at the moment. Number five, we've got a homegrown movie called their finest and audience-pleasing dip into nostalgia, the blitz and propaganda movie-making with Gemma Arterton and Bill Nighy appears to be holding very well indeed. Percentage-wise, it is the strongest holdover of the week. And we have an interesting phenomenon before we go on to our break at number six.
Well, let's go back, and let's go back to their finest, because I've been hearing from friends this week who've seen this how much they adored it. Steve Kaplan, who does Gadgets and Gizmos on Share Radio, he and his wife went and thought it was an utterly charming film. And yet, for once, we sort of seemed to be against you, because you told me that not only did you lot like it last week, but lots of other people didn't. I find it very odd that a film that is so innocuous should so divide viewers.
I know, which is interesting, because I know a lot of people who've gone to see it. It's obviously a film that British audiences want to support. And I think Bill Nighy is a huge box office attraction. He's rather like Judy Dench to the sort of yes. the Silver Surfers. And he does sort of pull them in. And I was talking to a friend of mine about it, and he said, oh, yes, we really enjoyed it. And I put my criticism on the table, and he agreed with all of them. And he said, well, in spite of that, I did really enjoy it. Yes, yes, it was, you know, Bill Nighy recycling his old persona that we've seen a million times. No, the backdrops weren't very convincing. But for him, it didn't really matter.
Hmm. Well,
so go and enjoy yourself. Oh, my wife saw it as well, and she thought it was delightful.
Good. Well, I agree with her and not you in this one instance only, James. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Business of Film with James Cameron. And sadly, our last edition of The Business of Film on DAB, but we will be continuing online. So do, if you want to listen to it in future, go to the Share Radio website, download the Share Radio app. You will then be able to keep listening. We will, of course, still be podcasting this, so it'll be up on Audio Boom as well as on the Share Radio website. So, James, we've got down to number five, where we disagree about their finest. What is number six?
Bahubali, The Conclusion. Now, this is really odd, Simon. This film, Bahubali, yes. The Conclusion, or Bahubali 2, as it's also known, is in the chart, the same film, four times.
What?
The same film, four times, but different versions. The one at number six is the version in Hindi. It's a very long action-adventure filmed in Hyderabad in India, and there is Bahubali, The Conclusion at number nine as well, which was shot in Tamil, and there are other various dialects further down the chart.
That's
obviously, I think the first one did pretty well, so... Sorry?
Well, that's absolutely fascinating. I don't think we've ever come across this, surely.
I certainly have. Oh, no. It's certainly a new phenomenon.
Because we've had plenty of times where there have been, to use the all-embracing term, Bollywood films that have made it into the top 10. But it's the first time I've heard of the same film coming in different language versions.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
clearly
absolutely.
We occasionally get foreign language films. I think we've had one or two, haven't we, particularly Studio Ghibli films that have been released in the UK, both in a dubbed version and in a subtitled version. So,
yes, we have. But the combined box office of that was counted as the same film.
Right,
this is the first time that they're different titles because they're in different languages. But hey ho, go figure.
But that does seem slightly odd. You would think that it would make sense to amalgamate them. But I guess not. Ours is not to reason why, James. Okay, so that's number six. Yeah. Bahubali, The Conclusion, which you can go and watch in Hindi, Tamil. What are the other languages? I couldn't remember. But anyway, and oddly enough, I wonder if any of them are actually subtitled in English.
I wonder. Yeah, we'll have to go out and seek one out, Simon.
My experience with Bollywood has not been great.
It's under 3 hours, so it won't take that big a chunk of your life.
Great. Okay, so what is next?
Well, we've talked about my wife going to see Their Finest. I think at number seven, we should talk about your daughter seeing Moulin Rouge as part of the Secret Cinema Initiative, which has popped up again at number seven, just based on one screening.
Extraordinary, yes, an expensive evening out, but one that she felt was not just worth doing. She had an absolutely fantastic time, but worth, she felt, coming all the way down from Leeds. Now, I've been very enthusiastic about cinema, but I'm not sure I've travelled quite as far as from Leeds to London to go and see a film. But clearly this is adding the experience onto it. Now, I haven't yet been to my local multiplex, where I understand they now have, they're calling it 4D in one of the screens, which is, you know,
oh, really?
Spraying you with water and shaking the seats around and even scents and various things appearing as well. But I suspect that Izzy probably thinks that Moulin Rouge secret cinema version is a much better way of doing it. Well, what you're doing really is a form almost of immersive theatre with a film show.
Yes, absolutely. And if you've got the money and the inclination, I think it sounds an absolute blast. Moulin Rouge, of course, starring Nicole Kidman and Ewan McGregor, directed by Baz Luhrmann. It's an odd film. I think it's a bit like Marmite. Some people loved it, others loathed it. I wasn't sure when I started watching it whether I was watching the worst film ever made, but I kind of got into the groove and rather enjoyed it by the end.
I confess I did enjoy it enormously, and that's despite the film, the fact that many of the songs, because I'm such a sort of fuddy-duddy person who likes classical music and almost no pop music since 1970 when the Monkees split up, I enjoyed it despite not knowing the songs were, so I didn't get that sort of extra little frisson.
Right. The soundtrack is just fantastic. And what a great singer Nicole Kidman is. You don't really think of a singer, but of course she was in the charts when she paired Robbie Williams with Something Stupid, she sang, got to number one.
And it's a very nice version. I have it on my iTunes. Yes, I agree.
We must share. I'll give you my Guardians of the Galaxy DVD. To lend, of course.
That's very kind of you, James. OK, so Moulin Rouge, secret cinema. I don't know how many weeks that's continuing for, but that's certainly in the charts at number 7. What is number 8?
Number 8, we have a film called Smurfs, The Lost Village, which we talked about before. Number 9, we have Bahubali, The Conclusion, this time in Tamil. Number 10, we have a new film called The Promise. I think with the imminent fragmentation of Europe, this film, which is about the Armenian refugee crisis, could not seem more timely. I mean, what's interesting is to this day, Turkey refuses to acknowledge its country's annihilation of the Armenian people 100 years ago. In fact, it's even illegal to discuss it in Turkey. What's really interesting is the very word genocide, geno from people, side from killing, was coined by the lawyer Raphael Lemkin to describe the atrocities carried out by the Ottoman Empire between 1915 and 1923. And this film is definitely about genocide, although it's coated in this sort of historical love triangle with Christian Bale as an American journalist, Charlotte Le Bon as an Armenian, Paris-raised young woman, and Oscar Isaac as a medical student, who all meet up at the opening of the First World War.
Yes.
And it's a shame, because I am a huge fan of Christian Bale. Not entirely sure what he's doing in this film. I love Charlotte Le Bon. I don't think her character is particularly well written. And I wanted to know more about their characters. The real star of the film is Oscar Isaac, an extraordinary actor who's done so well in a number of films. And we see the events, particularly through his eyes. It's directed by Terry George, and he's a very old-fashioned director. He did Hotel Rwanda and Some Mother's Son.
And In the Name of the Father, I think. Oh, he wrote that.
He wrote that, yeah. Yes. That Jim Sheridan directed that. And he's a bit of a workmanlike journeyman director. I think he gets by on very incendiary subject matter and excellent actors. Of course, Helen Mirren and Some Mother's Son, and Don Cheadle, brilliant, and Sophie Okonedo, both of whom were nominated for Oscars in Hotel Rwanda. I think this is a film one should kind of see. It's not the first film about the Armenian genocide. Interestingly, the Armenian-Canadian director Atom Egoyan made a very interesting film about the tragedy in 2002. It was called Ararat, and it was starring Charles Aznavour as a filmmaker who wanted to make a film about the Armenian genocide. But this really is a film about the Armenian genocide, and it's a 12A certificate. I would have thought it would be a 15, because I was very disturbed by this film, just by seeing these defenseless women and children gunned down by the Turkish forces, I found very hard to watch, frankly.
As you say, Turkey has not actually recognised this ever happened. My sister-in-law's mother was a baby who was found alive under a pile of corpses, massacred by the Turks.
Really?
Yes. So I think, sadly, she now has Alzheimer's, so I don't think she ought to go and see it, but I'm sure the family as a whole will find it very interesting. OK, James, so that's The Promise, which sounds worthy and sort of worth seeing for historical purposes, if not perhaps...
Yeah. Well, it's a sweeping epic that doesn't so much sweep as judder. I don't think it's very well edited. I think it wants to be 3.5 hours, and it's sort of crammed into 2 hours and 15 minutes. And to give... Terry George justice, I think he probably made a very good film, but it needs time to breathe. It doesn't have enough atmosphere, and I wanted more character development. But I think it's interesting, and I would recommend it if you are interested in your history.
Okay. Well, I know quite often, although we got down to number 10, you like to point out other things outside the chart. Anything you want to have a look at there?
There is a film at number 33. Other than saying this is perhaps the most profound, the film that's had the most profound effect on me of any release I've seen this year, I would like to say very little about it, other than it is called Heal the Living. It's a Franco-French film, and it is such a beautiful work of cinema. I went in knowing nothing about it and was sucked along its sort of narrative arc. As more and more characters were introduced, all of whom were deftly drawn, very individual, completely believable figures, revealing how significant we all are to each other, whether we know it or not. To be honest, I wasn't even aware of the director before, Catel Quillavier, although this is actually her third film. Emmanuel Saigner, so some people will know as Mrs. Polanski. Roman Polanski, yeah. Is in it. Teha Ramin is in it, who plays a young doctor whose empathy for his patients is in marked contrast to his superiors. And all these people, and they've got such interesting lives, and they interact. I will say it is a film about mortality and maybe immortality. It's a hypnotic treatise on the human condition. And what I like about the director, she's unafraid to let it daydream. It's very elegantly put together, almost like a symphony. And one moment she will suddenly take you into the reverie of a nurse who's in a lift. Mm. And then she will have a little flashback, sort of fill in a little sort of piece of the jigsaw there. And it just glides along, sort of flittering back and forth until the whole picture ends on this momentous final moment. And I was so moved by it.
I suspect that it's probably quite hard to get to see anywhere outside one or two art houses, cinemas in London, presumably. So people are going to have to wait, I guess, to see it.
Well, if you are near a large urban area, it's a Curzon artificial eye release. I would beg you to go and see it. It is an extraordinarily powerful, profound and humane film, beautifully put together.
James, we're almost at the end. We have about 30 seconds. If there's anything else among movie news that you would like to talk about. I'm sure somebody died this week that I thought you'd probably want to talk about. Now I can't even remember who it was, which just shows how appalling.
Well, I want to go out on a bright note, if I may, because we occasionally talk about new films that have been announced. And there's quite an interesting casting coup, I think, this week for a new film called Triple Frontier, directed by J.C. Chandor, who did Margin Call.
Oh, I love that. Yes.
All Is Lost and A Most Violent Year. Anyway, it was originally starring Mahershala Ali, who is still in it, the Oscar winner from Moonlight. And also, it's just been announced that Ben Affleck and Casey Affleck are in it as well.
James Cameron Wilson, as you say, going out on a high. James and I will be back with more Business of Film and Share Radio online, so do listen out for us then. But for Share Radio DAB, that is it from the Business of Film, from myself and James.
Wait a minute, wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Is it safe?
We don't need no badges. I don't have to show you any stinking badges.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.